to the Claudio Relsano Show on ClaudioRelsano.com. Claudio will be speaking to sports legends from the 70s, 80s, and 90s about their careers, business, and what they're doing now. He will also hold roundtable discussions with some old friends about trending topics in the world of sports. And now, here's Claudio.
Okay, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to the Claudio Relsano Show. Rick Mitchell, thank you very much for the introduction, as always. Today, we have a very special guest, Lyle Fitzsimmons. He is a writer for Eye on Sports at CBSSports.com. He's a columnist for the Bleacher Report, and he's also a Boxing Hall of Fame voter, which I think is an unbelievable honor. And we will talk to him, and hopefully I won't get mad at him about not including my brother Vinny Paz this year. So we will get into that and see who he voted for. Larry King is a legendary figure in journalism and on TV, obviously. And he had something years ago on the USA Network, not USA Network, on the USA Today newspaper. And it was called the 2 cents, My 2 cents. And I always enjoyed that article. And he would basically give his random thoughts on everything from sports to politics to just everything. So I said, I always wanted to do something like that. So I'm going to do it. Except I'm going to call it my 16 cents. That's my uniform number. So we're going to do that. So number one, the baseball playoffs. They've been pretty good. The Brewers obviously swept Colorado. The Indians Astros series, that's been so-so. Dodgers and Braves is turning out to be a nice series. And the Yankees Red Sox is always exciting. But, you know, they talk about the game being slow and how do we speed the game up? Well, all these pitching changes that are happening, it's getting ridiculous. You know, this guy faces one batter, take him out. Pretty soon they're going to be facing throwing two pitches and take him out. I mean, you watch with all these sabermetrics and all these crazy things that they're coming up with. I'm not a fan of that. And nobody pitches a complete game anymore. I mean, years ago, you get a guy, forget about the Hall of Famers like a Steve Carlton, a Bob Gibson, a Jim Palmer, Nolan Ryan, who had tons of complete, Tom Seaver, tons of complete games. Go to the other guys who were all-stars or just damn good pitchers like a Jim Rooker, a Jerry Royce, guys like that. Those guys had a lot of complete games. Go try to take those guys out of a game. You know, they threw that first pitch and their promise to themselves was, hey, I'm finishing this game. So that's really, I'm not really crazy about all the pitching changes. Sometimes these managers tend to overmanage. And the swings that they're taking, for you fans who are watching baseball, when you see the logo, when the logo is facing the pitcher, or for a right-handed batter facing the shortstop or third baseman, he is flying open. When they fly open, you lose power and you're susceptible to the outside pitch. And for a lefty, it's again the pitcher or the second base slash first baseman. And that's all you see. These guys are uppercutting like crazy, the launch angle. And when they do hit the ball consistently, that's when they stay closed. And that's when that logo is not facing those spots I told you. For a righty, maybe when he is facing second base or first baseman. The lefty, when he's facing the third baseman shortstop. Excuse me. So take a look at that next time. These guys are just going for the pump every single time. And again, not a fan of the swings that are being taken today. And unfortunately, there's an old Italian saying, the fish stinks from the head. It starts that way in the pros and it trickles all the way down to Little League. And I do a lot of hitting lessons and I see how that works. And I'm kind of glad because that means more money for me because I fix these guys up. But anyway, so the playoffs have been exciting, but I think the game would be a lot better if those two things were addressed. As far as the teams are concerned, the Astros, boy, I tell you, with their pitching staff, it's going to be very, very hard to beat them. I was always an offensive guy, but in 86, when the Astros almost shut down the 86 world champion Mets, that's when it hit me. Pitching is incredibly, incredibly important. So I do like the Astros, even though the Red Sox, the Yankees are going to they have big sluggers. But if the Astros can continue to pitch the way they're pitching, they're going to be tough to beat. Brewers are a very scrappy team, but I'm still going to go with the Dodgers in the National League. I'll give you my picks here soon. But anyway, maybe the next show. Let me think about it a little bit more. And number six, the commercials, the commercial Let the Kids Play with Ken Griffey, basically saying, again, let them have fun. If they're a little bit of a showman, let them be a showman. The Reggie Jacksons, the Dave Parkers, the Ricky Hendersons. I remember Lee Mazzilli, when he was in the All-Star game, he drew a walk and he hit the bottom of the bat and it spun. You know, I like things like that. Dennis Eckersley, after each strikeout, he'd point. Joaquin Andujar would be very emotional. Nowadays, everybody's covering their mouth, and if they hit a home run, they're pretending like they're depressed. I've talked about it on this show before with Nick Kaplack and Rick Mitchell, my roundtable guests, and I'm just not a fan of it. Let them have fun. Great line. Let them play. Now, I'm not in agreement of these guys taunting the other team. I don't like that. But if they make a basket catch, if they wear some wristbands, wear some white shoes, who cares? Let them be who they are. Let them show some emotion. I know the other day, Puig from the Dodgers, he made a base running error. He tried to do a delayed steal, and he got caught stealing. And he was out by a mile, and he ends up hugging his former teammate. And he was kind of embarrassed about the play, and John Smoltz, you know, ripped on him pretty hard. Then he continued to rip on him about his style of play. And then he made a pretty nice catch, and he kind of flipped the ball over his head back into the infield. And Smoltz was very stern about that and did not like it at all. And to me, you know, this respect the game thing, I think you're disrespecting the game if you don't play with passion, if you don't play with heart, if you don't care. If you make a great catch, why not put a little something to it? You know, if you're passionate about it, as long as it's not fake and you're not, you know, pointing to the other team or something like that. You know, to me, it's all about having fun, being passionate. Now, if you're down 15 and you showboat, well, maybe that's not the right time to do it. But, so I'm not really in favor of all this crazy, again, back to the unwritten rules. Number seven, the NFL, Kansas City, 5-0, Pat Mahomes. Boy, outside of Dan Marino and Elway, I don't know if I've seen a guy, the ball come out of a guy's hand as fast and as hard as Pat Mahomes. He is definitely the real deal. Is Kansas City the real deal? That I'm still not sure on. The Rams are 5-0. They do look real. But in the NFL, excuse me, is there any one team that you really can hang your hat on and say, that's the team that's going to go to the Super Bowl? I bet you if you talk to most people, at least in the AFC, I bet you they still say their pick would be the New England Patriots. Even though they've gotten off to a slow start, you kind of trust them more than everyone else. The Oakland Raiders and John Gruden, I'm a huge, huge fan of John Gruden. As an announcer, he was fantastic, and I love him as a coach. I've studied him for years, and I think he's another guy, you talk about passionate. And he's an offensive, in my opinion, genius. They've got off to a slow start, but I don't expect that to last. I expect him and that team to turn things around. The Cleveland Browns won two in a row. Baker Mayfield, in my opinion, is definitely the real deal. But when I see him play and his style of play, I wish that they would have given Doug Flutie the same opportunities that they're giving this young man. I think Doug Flutie would have been, he was a star, you know, pretty much, but he could have been a superstar in the NFL if they would have just taken the reins off of him and let him go. College football, Herm Edwards. If I had a son that was going to play college football, the guy that I would push him towards first and foremost is Herm Edwards. I think the NFL wasted him for years after he was done at Kansas City. And he was working for ESPN. I think they could have definitely used him more. First of all, I think he should have been a head coach. Second of all, I think that he should have been one of those guys. I know he did talk to players at NFL functions, but they could have used him even more. The guy is an incredibly intelligent guy. My mom used to say, never speak from the neck up, speak from the heart up. And he certainly does that. And again, I would love, if I had a son, I would love for him to have played for a man and a coach like Herm Edwards. The fight the other night, the MMA fight, that was their big pay-per-view. Nurmagomedov versus Colin McGregor. first of all, McGregor got pounded pretty good, and he's a master showman as well, and he's a big marketer. So he made $1 zillion on it, I'm sure. But what happened after the fight, the brawl that went out of the octagon, you know, that obviously gives the MMA a bad look and a bad name and a black eye. And that's going to be tough to overcome, I think. And especially since now one of their major stars, McGregor, lost. That's not going to be good. Big baby Jarrell Miller, who KO'd Tomas Adamek in a heavyweight fight the other night. I am high on big baby Jarrell Miller. I think right now he's the third best heavyweight in the world behind Wilder and Joshua. And he's somebody definitely to be reckoned with. I know, I guess who I'm going to have on, who's on my boxing show, and we co-host Still City Sports World here in Pittsburgh together, Lucien Dupree, is not a fan of his at all. I think he's going to shock a lot of people, and he's going to be a great personality for boxing. Joshua Wilder against Fury coming up in December. I think Wilder is going to blow him out. I'm just not a big fan of Fury. He beat Klitschko a couple years ago to win the title. Klitschko didn't do anything that fight. Fury is a showman. He's good for boxing, but I just don't see him being much there. 15, Wilder Joshua. If that fight happens, that's going to be a mega fight. At least nowadays, that would be a mega fight. I will get closer to that prediction as we get closer to that fight. But at least that's a good fight to have. It'll draw a lot of interest. And finally, a book that I read a ton, and I will share books that I'm reading with you. Right now, I'm reading a book that is a couple of years old, but he's an author that I read a lot, all of his books. It's by James Altucher, and the book is called Choose Yourself, Guide to Wealth. He has a few other books called Choose Yourself. One of the books is called Choose Yourself. Another book is called Reinvent Yourself. So it's a great business book, and some, a lot of common sense, some financial things in there, which we will talk about on my show periodically with different athletes. But so Choose Yourself, Guide to Wealth is the book that I'm reading now. So, you know, once in a while, I'll be giving you my 16 cents, my thoughts on things. And so next we will have our very special guest, Lyle Fitzsimmons.
Has your child been diagnosed with an autism spectrum or developmental issue? You're not alone. Aspire Pediatric Therapy has been helping families for over 10 years and has three convenient locations. Through love, laughter, and play, the Aspire team provides occupational speech and feeding therapy using the area's only state-of-the-art sensory motor gyms. Aspire will treat you and your family like family. Don't settle for less. Call 412-474-3566 or check them out on the web at AspirePediatricTherapy.com.
Okay, everybody, as I said, we have a very special guest, Lyle Fitzsimmons. He is the writer for Eye on Sports on CBS Sports.com. He is also a columnist on Bleacher Report, and he has a great Twitter, which I'd like you to check out and follow, Fitzbits, at Fitzbits. Lyle, I just followed you yesterday, so I'm expecting a follow back.
You'll absolutely get it, man. No problem.
All right, brother. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. First off, let me ask you this. How does one get to be a voter for the Boxing Hall of Fame, which I think is a fantastic honor and opportunity?
Well, I've been a voter since I became a member of the Boxing Writers Association of America. When you become a full member, and that's not something you can, you know, go and solicit and say, hey guys, I want to be part of this. When I was asked, I don't know, probably 8-10 years ago, give or take. And they asked me if I was interested. I said, sure. And I had to submit a collection of work. And you have to be a guy who writes about boxing a fair bit. It can't be just like once in a while or once every 6 months. Or I do a blog on a TV show or a TV card every once in a while. You have to have some sort of track record in it. And then they'll, take a look at that. And if they deem me worthy enough, they'll make you a full member. And the full members are the ones who vote for the modern classification of fighters going in every year.
Wow, that's great. And how many voters are there?
I'd say roughly, and don't quote me on this, but I believe they're in the neighborhood of 100, but it may be more, it may be less. I'm just trying to guess, what the membership of the association is as far as full members. They have full, and then they have like complimentary or supplementary members. So I'm not sure what the exact membership is, but I know it's the full members that get to vote for the Hall.
Okay. Now, tell us how the voting process works. I know in the NFL, they have pretty much a room, and somebody mentions or nominates a player, and he what explains why that player deserves nomination into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Sure. I know in football, they have guys kind of vouching, you know, speaking their piece for each candidate, right, and then they kind of go from there. Well, the way it is from my perspective on boxing is I'm sent a ballot at the first week of October every year. In fact, I just got it on Saturday, this past Saturday. And it's got a list of all the guys, all the modern fighters who are eligible to get in. And then we are allowed to pick as many as five. And then we submit those ballots. And then the top three vote getters among the membership are chosen as modern members. Now, the non-performers, the observers, and some of the other ones, they are chosen by a committee having to do with the Hall of Fame itself. The modern fighters, like the guys who you see on the ballot every year, like the Ricky Hattons and the Meldrick Taylors and Donald Currys and guys like that, they are voted on by the Association of Membership. The other guys, you know, the historical figures, guys who haven't been in, you know, from 100 years ago or something, those are old timers and things like that. There's a committee at the Hall of Fame that is chosen to pick those guys.
Okay. Now, what makes you vote for somebody? What's your criteria for a Hall of Fame boxer?
It's kind of it's not scientific by any stretch, but it's kind of a multi-step process. I mean, first, I just kind of give them the sniff test, the eye test, whatever the first impression is. You know, do you believe this guy was a Hall of Famer based on your awareness of him? And there are a lot of guys, or at least some guys anyway, that I'm not terribly familiar with. So they'll have to require a little bit more research. But the guys who are on the ballot these days, I mean, most of them I've either seen in person or I've seen fight on television an awful lot. I know a fair bit about. So, you know, that's kind of the first criteria. Do I feel they were? Do I feel they weren't right off the top of my head? And then I go through and do research. I see who they fought, who they beat, what titles they had, what weight class they were in, how long their prime was. Were they considered not just a good fighter? Because there are plenty of good fighters out there. But were they considered one of the best fighters in the world for a stretch of time? And personally, not everybody has the same criteria. But personally, if you were never considered one of the best fighters in the world, pound for pound, at least for a stretch of time, that I don't believe you ought to get in. I mean, like I said, there's a difference between a Hall of Fame and a Hall of Pretty Good. And, I think only the elite guys deserve the tap on the shoulder to get in the Hall of Fame.
Now, what do you do about a guy like a Chris John, a Sven Aki, guys who, Yvonne Calderon, who were damn good and had world titles, but didn't get the attention that you mentioned Ricky Hatton or Vinny Paz or guys like that received, or am I
sure? That's where it gets more challenging. I mean, a guy like Chris John was a champion for what felt like 20 years,
right.
You know, but then you go and look at his quality of opposition. Did he fight the best guys? Did he beat the best guys? I mean, if he defended 20 times, he might've defended against the guy you really heard of and recognized, you know, three or four times out of that. Same goes for Sven Aki, same way. And I know the trail behind him is he got a lot of hometown decisions and maybe things that he didn't deserve. So you take all that into consideration and then you kind of lean one way or the other. I mean, it's objective. Everybody kind of has their own viewpoint on it. One guy will be a big, Sven Aki fan. And then, you know, another guy will say he doesn't deserve to even look at the place, let alone get into it. And, there are similar arguments. You mentioned Vinny Paz, Gaddy, I know inspires a lot of, fervor every year when people talk about him and guys like that. And Hatton will be the same way. And I know Donald Curry is a guy that a lot of people are banging the drum for. So, it inspires a great deal of passion. And some guys have their guys who they believe belong. And then other guys have other guys they think so.
How accurate were you last year? I know you were on my boxing TV show, and I believe you were pretty accurate.
Yeah, I think I did all right. I thought Morales ought to get in, and he got in. One guy who I was not accurate on, unfortunately, was Meldrick Taylor. I still believe he belongs, and I'll vote for him again this year, but he didn't get in. Winky, I voted for. And I'm trying to think of who else got in that I may or may not have. But yeah,
Klitschko.
I mean, typically, Klitschko, I thought deserved it. So, I'm typically pretty good. I mean, I'm not perfect. I don't know that anybody is, or at least not too many of us. But I usually have a pretty good ratio of guys I think belong. And then there are others who I absolutely miss on. I mean, a lot of people were in favor of Getty and I wasn't and still not. So, you know, that'll be a miss that follows me for a lot of years.
Now, who are you? Can you tell us who you voted for this year?
Oh, sure. I'll be happy to.
Are you going to upset me? Because you know what?
Maybe I better not then. Maybe you'll have to wait for maybe you have to wait for the column that comes out tomorrow morning where I do actually announce
it. Come on now. All right, go ahead. Give me your five.
There, Well, I'm only going to vote for three this year because I don't know. You know what? The ballot is similar to last year's. There weren't any new guys on there who absolutely blow your doors off. There's not a, you know, there's not a Roy Jones on there. There's not a Mayweather or a Pacquiao or that everybody's going to say, yeah, he belongs. It's a lot of the same guys from last year. So, you know, I picked Meldrick again. I picked Sungkyul Moon, and I also picked him last year. So there was another whiff from last year. And I picked Hatton again. So, but outside of that, there weren't any new guys that I thought really, you know, really turned my head all that much. Although I haven't mailed the ballot in yet, so I still do reserve the right
Don't
to back
it
off
yet.
And it change things.
It
but you know, I know Vinny Paz is somebody you're gonna hit the nail for a little bit. But you know, until I put the envelope, put the stamp on the envelope, it's not final.
All right, here's my pick. Okay, obviously I got Vinny Paz, 50-10, 5-time world title. Not only that, but a lot of guys. But you know what? Somebody joked with him one time about the 5 times, and he said, if you would have won 5 world titles, you'd have said 5 world titles. I know people might say those were other fringe belts, but for me, it was always the fighter who made the belt, not the belt who made the fighter. Mm-hmm. But Vinny Paz, Michael Moore, Chris John, Ricky Hatton, and then the final two, I'm up in the air between Calderon and Hernandez.
Okay.
But now I'm going to, I got to push for Vinny. Vinny, I read one time, Vinny, I read one time where they said that 3 guys at this time period could fill the house without a belt. That was George Foreman, Mike Tyson, and they mentioned Vinny.
Sure.
Vinny, I obviously, you know, he's not a friend. He's a brother to me, so maybe I'm very, very biased. But I've been to many of his fights, and I don't know, the guy never took a round off. The guy did win titles, 5 world titles. And obviously the movie, I think, helps with, I would think, help him with the voters. But Michael Moore, you know, a guy who's going to be on our show, and you were on our show with him, Smoking Jim Frazier, who's a boxing expert as well. He said that he felt Michael Moore was the Joe Louis of the light heavies. Chris John, like you said, my God. And Michael Moore obviously did win the heavyweight title a few times. And Chris John, it seemed like he was champion for years and years. And Ricky Hatton, even though somebody who doesn't like him might say, well, when he was up against the Mayweathers or, you know, the bigger name guys, he didn't win. But what a following he had. And Calderon and Hernandez, I'm probably going to lean towards Calderon. What do you think about Calderon?
If I were going to lean toward any of the guys you just mentioned, Calderon, I think, would be the guy because he was, you know, first of all, he was obscure. A lot of mainstream fans have no idea who this guy is. They think he's a ball player or something.
Right.
Because
exactly.
I know the White Sox used to have a guy named Yvonne Calderon.
Right.
But yeah, he was the king of like the mini flyweights and the strawweights and the light flyweights for years. And he wasn't a real exciting fighter. He's very technical. So I could see a lot of people getting on his side, you know, who are real, you know, hardcore boxing fans. He's going to suffer with, you know, a lot of the voters who just either didn't find him interesting or don't know a whole lot about him, but they know, you know, who Donald Curry is, or they know who Vinny Pazienza is or whoever else. So, you know, he may suffer because he was so good, but he was so, you know, he was so anonymous compared to those other guys.
Now, with Vinny, do you think he has a chance? I know you think he has a chance to get in, but do you think he has a good chance to get in this year?
He certainly got a chance. I mean, for the reasons you said, I don't, you know, me not voting for him doesn't mean I don't think he was a big time fighter. I mean, I remember seeing him when he debuted on ESPN when he was, you know, a kid and thinking, wow, this guy's going to be world class. I just don't think he's got the wins against the other best fighters of his era. You know, when he fought the Roy Jones, he didn't win. You know, he doesn't have that signature win against another Hall caliber, another great big time fighter who was also in his prime. But as far as, you know, having a following, being able to pack a house, no matter how old he was and what weight he was in. Oh yeah. There's no doubt about it. He reminds me a lot of Gaddy. You know, there were a lot of people who feel very passionate about Gaddy and thought he was in, he belonged in. He was an exciting guy. People adored him, win, lose, or draw. And, you know, for the same passion that got Gaddy in, I wouldn't be surprised if it rides Vinny in there at some point as well.
What do you think his chances are this year?
50-50, 60-40, maybe. I mean, I think he's got a legitimate chance. Whether it's a great chance, I don't know. But, you know, he'll probably do better than Calderon does, I mean, or at least as well as Calderon does. And maybe that's a shame. I don't know. You know, some would argue that's unfair to begin with. But But again, and I try to point it out in the columns that I write every year, that the guys I don't vote for, it doesn't mean I think they were trash fighters, because certainly they weren't. You know, you don't get on a Hall of Fame ballot for being lousy. You get on a Hall of Fame ballot because you had a career that 99.9% of guys would kill for. It's just that extra tenth of a percent. Are you good enough to get to that highest level? And to me, I think it's a select number that ought to get in. But, you know, again, I'm not the only person who votes. So, you know, other people believe other things, and it kind of comes and goes.
Now, forgive me. Did you mention on your list Michael Moore?
I'm not voting for him. But again, he was a tremendous light heavyweight. I don't think he's got a signature win at light heavyweight. You know, he wasn't there for very long. He was, you know, he had to go after the recognition at heavyweight, and he accomplished things at heavyweight that nobody had done it at that point. I just don't think his shelf life at heavyweight was good enough, but he's one of those guys who's, you know, his name will be on my mind as I seal that envelope, and I may put a check mark next to him, because I've only voted for three so far. So I still have leeway to throw a couple more on there. And he certainly, now he's a guy whose prime was, you know, I saw all his big fights, and you know, he beat Holyfield, which was a fight that, you know, a lot of guys didn't think he was going to win. Teddy Atlas became a star thanks to that one. And, you know, and if not for a gigantic right hand from George Foreman, I think maybe he's a slam dunk that he gets in. But, you know, you ask anybody who Michael Moore is, they're going to say, oh, that's the guy Foreman knocked out.
Right. Very good. Very well put. Now back to Vinny. I've said this numerous times. If you read anything about me or interviews, live interviews, I mean, Vinny has had so much impact in my life.
Oh yeah, I know.
and I've not only that, but I sent him an autographed bat one time, and it said fan, friend, brother. And I love the guy.
I'm standing in my room right now, and I have my big smart board, my big screen, you know, computer screen on me. And I'm looking at, I've got his box rack record up, and I'm scrolling through it as we're having this conversation.
Well, if you look at the guys he's fought, okay. Now, Evander Holyfield, 40-10, people say, okay. But look who Evander fought and beat. Evander had a hell of a record. But Vinny, if you look at the guys he fought, I mean, they were some tough guys. And not only that, though, but you do have to give him some points, for the lack of a better term. The guy did come back from a broken neck, and the movie,
which
I'm sure you saw the movie, but that
no,
was
no question about it.
Some of these movies are over exaggerated. Vinny's, trust me when I tell you, was under exaggerated, because they didn't think people would believe what he did. But for him to come back, and then when he came back, he fought, I forgot the guy's name. I just had it. He fought a good guy who was eventually a world champion. God, it's going to bother me with the guy. But you have it in front of you. What was his? It was in.
I'm looking at the
1992. November.
All right, let me scroll down here. November 92. He fought. Let's see. He was off 91. He came back. Luis Santana, the welterweight. December 92. Yeah.
Right. And he was, you know, he was a tough fighter. Vinny B.
Yeah, he had a welterweight title for a while.
That's right. And Vinny could have came back and fought a bum. One thing real quick. When Vinny was going to fight his last fight, his 50th fight, I said, Vinny, fight somebody who's like 10, 20, and 6, okay? Because the fans do not care. They just want to see you get that win and retire. He said, no, Claudio, I got to fight somebody good.
You got to go fight a guy. Well, and he deserves full credit for that. There's no question about it.
He fought Tucker Pudwell, who was a banger. And I said, why would you fight somebody who went the distance or went toe-to-toe with Eric Luka, the super middleweight champ? Fight somebody easy. He said, Claudio, that's not who I am. And what
that's not who he was. No question. He didn't take easy fights. And even when he lost, he went down on his shield. So there,
always.
You know, that doesn't strike me as the kind of guy he would have been, you know, when it came to choosing opponents.
You see, everybody used to say to me, you must have loved going to Vinny's fights, because I went to a ton of them. And I hated every single fight. Even when he fought Pat Lawler, no disrespect to Pat Lawler, but he fought Pat, and I was worried about that fight. You know, I mean, I just, when you love somebody that much, you don't want to see him get one hit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but after the fights that he won, and I was obviously very happy, but I just think with his career, it's more than just, you know, one thing with him. It's the secret sauce is how he fought and what he came back from. I mean, again, when you have a broken neck, boxing isn't really the sport. You can come back and play baseball with a broken neck.
Sure. Yeah. Boxing is not a sport you want to come back and do.
Basketball,
yeah, no
right. Boxing, no.
And it's golf.
Yeah, exactly. Not boxing. And not only did he come back and he was just like, oh, he was an okay fighter. He won three more world titles after that. And, you know, excited a lot of people. And And not only that, like I said, he's impacted so many people. And hey, these guys all, when they climb into the ring, you know, you gotta give them credit climbing up those steps. But I'm making my pitch for Vinny, and you're the only boxing writer I know, so I'm making a hell of a pitch to you.
Well, I can promise you there are guys out there who feel they may not have the passion you do, but they feel the same way about him, because they don't just look at the wins and losses. They look at the way he fought, the way he carried himself, the passion he generated with the fans. So, you know, and again, he reminds me a little bit of Gaddy, because Gaddy was, you know, he wasn't the best fighter in the world. Nobody, I don't think, even who's a fan of his ever argues he was, but he was always in great fights and he fought everybody he was supposed to fight. And, you know, he was successful in multiple weight classes. So, you know, other than the broken neck backstory, these guys are very, very similar. And, you know, Gaddy got in. So, you know, maybe there's hope.
And the thing with Vinny too, I think there's a stigma with him sometimes that he was one of those guys, you know, just brawling guts. But, you know, he was a very athletic fighter. As a professional baseball scout, one of the things I look for defensively are feet. But he had great feet, good jab, mm-hmm. and he had some power. You know, he knocked out Melvin Paul with one shot. Remember what he did to Rosenblatt. And then as mm-hmm. far as signature fights, you know, the three with Haugen. I know Duran was older, but Duran was still a hell of a fighter, and he did beat Duran twice. And then, of course, the Rosenblatt fight. So, you know, I think all those things mixed in. Plus, if you go to the Hall of Fame this coming year and you don't vote for him, I'm gonna say, Vinny, that's the guy who didn't vote for you.
So go that's all I need. I've already got the first win. I've already got the Gaddy posse after me. Now I'm gonna add him as well. And there's a bunch of fan groups that would like to get a piece of me. There's no question about that. But
I don't like those guys just because they're Italian either. But that helps. That helps.
Hey, my wife's half Italian, so maybe, you know, if you get her on your side, then, you know, I don't have a choice. I'll have to jump right in with it.
That's right. Give me her number. I'll contact her.
All right. I'll hook you guys up, and then maybe we can change our vote before I send it in.
And I saw your Facebook page, too. Beautiful family. And,
oh, well, thank you, man. I appreciate
great.
That.
And listen, I know you got to go. I'll tell everybody, this man is a school teacher as well. And he is, I don't want to say skipping class, but he took time to leave to do this interview. Lyle, I can't thank you enough. And real quick, do you go to the Hall of Fame at all?
I've been a couple of times. I don't go every year. I mean, I live down in Southwest Florida, so it's tough to get up there every single year. But I've been there for certain ones, and it's an experience. If anybody's listening who hasn't been, you know, do yourself a favor, get out there, and you know, just experience the hall itself, or experience you know, induction week and the parade and everything else. It's a,
were you there last
it's,
year?
It's something. It's something you need to do.
Were you there?
I was not there last year. I was not there last year. I haven't been there in a couple of years, actually, so it's been a little while.
I was there in 2017. Donnie Lalonde came, and we were friends, and we were there. So I'm not just friends with Italian boxers. But well, hopefully you're there this year, and if Vinny is inducted, I will guarantee you be there, and I'll be the guy in tears crying. But and I'll introduce you to him. So hopefully we
a personal
can
introduction will be necessary, and you'll be the guy who puts it together. All right, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lyle. Continued success, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the time. And when the kids get back in the room, I will spread the gospel of Vinny Paz. And you know, who knows? Maybe we'll have a groundswell of support from them.
That's right, and they'll be inspired by him for sure. Thank you so much.
Well, if nothing else, they'll be inspired by his story. So we'll, at the very least, they'll you know, they'll get something out of that.
All right, brother. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
All right, buddy. All right. Great job by Lyle Fitzsimmons. And yeah, the Boxing Hall of Fame is really, you know, you go in that place and you see the ring that Muhammad Ali fought Frazier in, and you see all the fists made out of cast, and these guys like a Primo Canera and Ken Norton, Larry Holmes, and of course Rocky Marciano, all those guys, and it's really a great exhibit. It's not a huge exhibit, which hopefully it will grow, but you got to go to it. And the whole weekend, like Lyle said, is an event. They have a fantastic parade. Then something else for you fans who might want to go. There's a restaurant called Graziano's, not affiliated with Hall of Famer Rocky Graziano, but you'll be eating there, and all of a sudden you'll see Mickey Ward come in, Marvin Hagler, James Toney. They just walk in, you know, and they're great with the fans. That's one thing I noticed. Like James Toney, this one guy actually said, James, I'm a huge fan of yours, but my friend is a huge fan. Would you mind giving him a quick call? And Toney was leaving the restaurant. He says, sure, no problem. And James Toney always came across as this mean, tough guy, you know, and he was in the ring. he called the guy, had a great conversation with him. And then who I was with, as I said, Donnie Lalonde, the former light heavyweight champ of the world, who has a fantastic story that Donnie's going to be one of my guests one of these days as well. He was signing autographs left and right and doing interviews and taking pictures and selfies and all that kind of stuff. So it's really a great event, which I've been to the, excuse me, other NFL Hall of Fame. I haven't been to Cooperstown yet, but I don't know if there's another Hall of Fame that the boxers are so accessible. And Jerry Cooney is another one. Jerry Cooney was unbelievably nice with everyone, taking pictures. He was at a golf tournament that Donnie and I played in. And, Jerry's taking pictures and talking to people and joking with people and just a great guy as well. So if you're a huge boxing fan, that's the event to go to. And as far as the interview with Lyle, like I said, I'm okay with a lot of his picks. But like I said, even if I wasn't, a brother with Vinny Paz, I you have to put him in. What he overcame, for those of you who don't know, it's a guy who won he's going to be, I'm going to get him on the show as well. He's a guy who won two world titles at a little tiny province, Rhode Island. Vinny on a good hair day is 5'7". Used to fight. He won the lightweight belt, junior lightweight, super middleweight, junior middleweight. But he won two world titles. Then he broke his neck. And you got to get the movie Bleed for this, which Miles Teller played an unbelievable Vinny Paz. Unbelievable. I mean, the guy was just fantastic. Should have won a ton of awards for his portrayal of Vinny. But Vinny won three more world titles after a broken neck. And like I said, he fought Luis Santana. Most guys wouldn't fight Luis Santana after their, 50th fight. But Vinny fights him right after breaking his neck. And this guy was a hell of a fighter. And eventually, he won a welter title, as Lyle said. So he was no, they call him tomato cans. He wasn't a bum. He was a good fighter. And Vinny dominated that entire fight. And you have to give Vinny points for that. And his exciting fights. Do me a favor and go Google up Vinny Pazienza. That's what his name was, Pazienza, against Melvin Paul. And you'll see a beautiful overhand right that knocks the guy out. Then, in my opinion, his biggest rival was a guy named Dana Rosenblatt, who was undefeated, knocking people out from Massachusetts. It was a huge rival. Vinny was really good to the guy, and the guy wasn't so respectful to Vinny, and that's not something that you do to Vinny. But they fought in the first couple rounds, and he put a mouse under Vinny's eye and was very, very arrogant in the ring, this guy Rosenblatt. And confidence is one thing, but arrogance is another. He probably thought, man, this is going to be an easier fight than I thought. All of a sudden, Vinny does this little shake, this little tremor, and gives him a right on the button, knocks the guy down. Rosenblatt gets up, his eyes are glazed over, and I won't tell you the rest, but Vinny, just Google that fight up. Pazienza Rosenblatt won. And he won the second fight, too, in my opinion. I was at that fight, and Vinny didn't get the decision, but that's another story. But, again, you're going to hear me talk a lot about Vinny. Vinny is one of the reasons why I do what I do today. He was always very supportive, and I will tell that story whenever Vinny's on the show, and I'll definitely get emotional about that, but that's okay. That's who I am. I speak from the heart up, not the neck up. But I really, really hope that Vinny gets voted in. Michael Moore, you got to give him a ton of credit, being a champion as he was, both in light heavies and heavyweight division. Ricky Hatton and the other guys that I mentioned, I believe they get in. But I think for my money, the slam dunks have to be Michael Moore and Vinny Paz. So those votes come out in December. And hopefully I'll be right on those picks, especially with Vinny. So hope you guys enjoyed that interview. And as always, I want to thank my producer, Adam Zalouf, who does a fantastic job. I was lucky to find him. He does my website as well. He's a grad student at Carnegie Mellon, a great, great guy. You can listen to our show. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. I believe I mispronounced that last time, but my daughter, Ida, and Adam corrected me. It's Spotify. Rate the show, rate us. Hope you give us a good rating and share it with your friends. This show is very, very important to me for a lot of reasons. I get to speak with a lot of guys that mean a lot to me, or guys that are very interesting. We're going to talk, obviously, about their careers. We'll also talk about, as I said before, their transition from their sport to the real world, and they'll have great stories that they want to share. And Rocky Blyer, former Pittsburgh Steeler and war veteran, has agreed to do the show. Vince Papale, they made a movie of his life, Invincible. He's going to do the show. Robin Cole, former linebacker of the Pittsburgh Steelers, has a great story. So these guys not only did things in their career, but they did things out of their career that are really impactful. And I want, you know, hopefully you guys listen to it and enjoy it and like it. You can listen to the show, as I said, on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. You can also listen to it on my website, ClaudioRelsano.com. That's ClaudioRelsano.com. And also going to have Donnie Lalonde on, as I mentioned, eventually. Donnie has a fantastic story, a very heart-touching story as well. So, again, we hope you enjoy the show. I enjoy doing it. Next week, we'll have another great guest. The show airs on Thursdays on my website, and again, on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Please subscribe to the show, rate us, and share with your friends. And thank you all for listening. I really, really appreciate it. And as always, thank you, Mom and Dad. And today is my 30th anniversary. I don't want to say anniversary, but the 30th year that my mom passed, October 8th. And today would have been my dad's 90th birthday. And on top of that, October 8th, 1990, my team at Penn State Beaver, it was my first year as a collegiate head coach, won a championship. And so I will always wear that ring and always look at that date with some mixed feelings. But nonetheless, always have to thank my parents. Okay, everybody, again, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Claudio Relsano Show. Be sure to tune in next time on ClaudioRelsano.com.